of such worship is material amelioration. The demigods, however, are never displeased with one who becomes a pure devotee of Lord Krishna and offers all his worship to the Lord. The demigods themselves are humble servants of Lord Krishna, as was amply demonstrated in Lord Krishna's pastimes on the earth. One who can experience the eternal soul within everyone's body certainly becomes dear to all living beings. Since he sees everyone as qualitatively equal to himself, he does not envy anyone nor try to lord it over any other living being. Being free from envy and a well-wisher of all, such a self-realized soul is naturally dear to everyone. As stated in the song to the six Goswamis, Dhira Dhira Janapriyo Priyokuro Nimatsaro Pujito. Translation again. Being fully endowed with conclusive knowledge of the Vedas and having realized the ultimate purpose of such knowledge in practice, you will be able to perceive the pure self, and thus your mind will be satisfied. At that time you will be dear to all living beings, headed by the demigods, and you will never be hampered by any disturbance in life. So here Krishna is speaking to Uddhava some transcendental knowledge, and we see that Uddhava is very eager to understand from Krishna the perfect knowledge, transcendental knowledge. He knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and even though he has actually received many different instructions from Krishna, he is, right up until the very last opportunity, he's going to try and extract as much transcendental knowledge from Krishna as he can. So that's intelligent, very intelligent. And of course, it is because of that intelligence and that eagerness that Krishna is very pleased with Uddhava. So here, of course, generally people are not interested at all in transcendental knowledge. That's the nature of Kali Yuga, that even though there's a great opportunity here, the majority of people, 99% of people, are not interested at all. But they're amongst Kali Yuga, those who are intelligent, those who have some brain substance left, they are very, very eager, knowing there's a great opportunity here to get knowledge directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself in this Kali Yuga, through Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually, especially now, the opportunity is the best for millions and billions and billions of years, because in this day of Brahma, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, and generally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, he appears after Krishna. So Krishna appears at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't always come, after Krishna. So every now and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will appear after Krishna. the transcendental knowledge of the Vedas, which the highest transcendental knowledge, the knowledge of bhakti, which can lead to prema, and prema, of course, which can, pure love of God can allow one to go back to the spiritual world. That is the perfection of knowledge in the Vedas. There is other knowledge. There is knowledge of karma yoga, by which one can, you know, get to the heavenly planets. There's knowledge of jnana, where one can become detached and perhaps even attain impersonal Brahman realization. There is knowledge of Ashtanga yoga, whereby one can understand the nature of the super soul in the heart. But the highest knowledge and realization offered in the Vedas is knowledge of the process of bhakti yoga, because through bhakti yoga one can achieve prema, and through prema, love of God, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, revive one's relationship with Him, and go back to the spiritual world. So this is the highest. But that knowledge of prema, the seeds of that understanding were sown in the heart of Lord Brahma at the beginning of this day, in the form of the four seed slokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then, just as a lotus flower blooms, that knowledge began to produce buds with the appearance of Prahlad Maharaj. And then, with the appearance of Vyas, and the acharyas that followed Śrīla Vyāsadeva, such as Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, and various acharyas in that line, those buds, flower buds, began to grow very, very strongly. But with the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, only with the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, did that flower of prema actually grow into the beautiful flower, which then the beautiful scent of that in the form of love of God permeated throughout the whole universe. So that understanding, that opportunity to understand that knowledge, that is here now. So intelligent people, they're you know, they're very, very eager to just get as much nectar as they can, you know, within the short span of life that we have. Sometimes you see that people win a prize where, you know, they can go into a supermarket and they've got, you know, 60 seconds. They get, you know, they can get a trolley and they can run down the aisles, and whatever they can get in that trolley, it's theirs, you know, and they got 60 seconds, you see them. They're just like, you know, pulling things in, things are going on the floor, and, you know, they just go crazy. 60 seconds, get all the nectar in there. So, because, you know, there's not much in the supermarket to get really excited about. But, you know, unless someone is a 2-year-old. But actually, this opportunity that we have for prema, love of God, this transcendental knowledge, that is the real nectar. Some intelligence left, they just spend every waking moment, and even within their sleep, every opportunity they can to extract this knowledge, take advantage of this knowledge which is coming down through the acharyas, through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, he distributed that knowledge. how to attain Krishna Prema through the six Goswamis and the various Acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, all of them who wrote many, many different books on the science. And in this way there's just a vast treasure house of literature which we can tap into, and in this way develop Krishna Prema. So that is a very, very rare opportunity, that the science of how to love God so well that he will reciprocate his love unlimitedly. And that science is there. Not just how to, you know, offer some prayers to get some, you know, material benefits or relief from suffering or anything like that, but the science of how to love God to the extent where he will offer his, he will literally give himself to that devotee who learns how to love Krishna in that way. The Supreme Personality of Godhead will actually give himself to that devotee. So, as we said, in the supermarkets you can get, you know, cans of asparagus and, you know, the tins of baked beans and what have you. But, you know, you can't go in there and check out God. You know. Yes, I'll take one Nishringa Dave, look, chuck in a couple of rams and I'll take a matcha, please, thank you very much. And, you know, it's, this one's on special today, give it a couple of them as well. You can't do that. But the opportunity is here is our shopping basket here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's actually one of the regular principles that we should be very, very eager to learn and to inquire. And those devotees who are really eager to, you know, absorb this transcendental knowledge, transcendental nectar, they make rapid advancement very, very quickly. You know, they become very steady devotees. Devotees very much appreciated by the Supreme Lord. Actually, Krishna, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that one who studies the Bhagavad Gita, which is even just a preliminary understanding, Krishna says that person worships me by his intelligence. And he then describes, of course, that, you know, one who teaches this understanding, this science of devotion to others, there is no one more dear to me than that person. So this is a secret, of course, that Srila Prabhupada revealed to us, that if you want to be instantly recognized by the Lord, preach Krishna consciousness. Don't, you know, you can, devotees can try to, you know, live in a secluded type of existence and try and perfect their own particular sadhana, which is good. But those devotees who work on their sadhana and at the same time have a real strong emphasis in their devotional life of teaching Krishna consciousness to others, they're immediately recognized. They're immediately recognized. Not only are they immediately recognized, the privileges that Krishna awards them are the topmost. In other words, Krishna is, they become so dear to Krishna that, you know, if there are some particular faults or discrepancies, Krishna is more inclined to overlook, you know, any discrepancies or unintentional faults that there may be in that devotee, their character or their, you know, their activities by preaching. As Srila Prabhupada gives a really unusual example, which is but just to show the extent of how favorites, how much a devotee becomes a favorite if they take the trouble to preach Krishna consciousness. I was listening to a conversation the other day. He was talking with some devotees in India, and he gave the example that when the British, when they were, you know, subduing India, and when there were certain battles that had to be won, the soldiers understood that their prize was that, you know, after the battle, then they could basically govern the village and do as they pleased. So the British government actually did like this. They actually allowed the soldiers then to just go into the, you know, village, and they could just choose women and, you know, what have you, and they would just rape them and what have you. Srila Prabhupada said he actually seen that. He saw that happen on certain occasions. But, you know, it's a very extreme example. But Srila Prabhupada is making the point, of course, that Krishna just becomes so much pleased by devotees who preach, you know, so it's such an extreme example, but just to give the idea. And he explained that, you know, generally the soldiers who are on the front line preaching Krishna consciousness, whatever they want, they got it. You see others, you know, if they run out of something, you know, they'll just ship it in. You know, that's their policy. That's their policy. Just, you know, keep those frontline soldiers with everything that they, you know, need as far as food, clothing, and what have you. So, you know, Prabhupada gives that example. But Krishna certainly becomes very pleased. Here we see Uddhava. Uddhava, again, very, very carefully, you know, tried to understand Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's different relationships with the residents of Vrindavan, with the residents of Dwarka and the residents of Hastinapur. Uddhava has been able to study love of God in all its various phases by the grace of Krishna. He has been able to be instructed in transcendental knowledge, and he's, you know, still really, really eager. Not that, you know, Uddhava, he received such the highest transcendental knowledge. You know, Krishna arranged for him to be personally instructed by the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan, and yet we see here that still he's so eager, you know, just giving more and more, you know what I mean? Just whatever, any question that I have not yet asked, let me just ask that. And even, you know, we see that Uddhava, he'll take the position of a very fallen devotee who doesn't know anything, and he's got no control of his mind and senses, just, you know, so he can get the opportunity to ask questions on behalf of others. So that, again, you know, he can extract this nectar from Krishna. Just so eager. And because of that, because he knows that this is very, very pleasing to Krishna, and therefore Krishna is actually sending him to Badarika Ashram. That after Krishna leaves, Krishna takes all his eternal associates with him back to the spiritual world. And practically all of them, there's very few remain, unless Krishna had a particular task for them. And Uddhava is one of those devotees that has such an excellent understanding. Krishna considers that his understanding of things is so good that in one sense it is like Krishna is personally present. Krishna is so confident with Uddhava that he feels that what they would ask me, what I could answer, I feel that Uddhava could do the same. He is understood so well. So when Krishna departs, he wants Uddhava to remain and to instruct such great personalities as Narayana, Rishi, and different personalities like that who reside in Badarik Ashram, in some very, very confidential understandings about the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. So we actually see that following in the footsteps of Uddhava, the various acharyas down through the ages, they've all made some particular contribution. You know, they each in their own right have understood, studied very carefully what the previous acharyas have given us, and then they've seen that if there is something that they can then contribute to expand upon something which is not yet been expanded upon, especially as times change, some information which may be automatically understood in previous ages then needs further explanation, as time goes on. So in this way, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he explains that the path of devotional service, it is we follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans, but not just one. He explains that the path is not set out by just one stalwart acharya. It's actually set out by many, many. In order to keep that path illuminated, in order to explain to the different devotees who are trying to traverse that path of Krishna Prema back to the spiritual world, various acharyas have to work in unison, in a chain, one after another, keeping that pathway illuminated. So we see that Srila Prabhupada, he perfectly studied. When you read Srila Prabhupada's books, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's life, you sort of wonder where he ever had the time to study. When you're reading A Lifetime in Preparation, the first volume of Prabhupada Lilamrita, he had his children, he had his business, he was travelling, he was a grihastha. He very rarely got together the temple. He met his spiritual master a few times. And, but somewhere amongst all of that, every day he must have been cramming in, about 4 hours of study, 2 to 4 hours of study. Otherwise, as you go through his books, you can see that he just has this perfect understanding. In his lectures, in his questions, in his conversations, you can always see that whatever someone would ask Srila Prabhupada, you could see that at some stage he'd already studied that, pondered over it, sorted out the controversies, and he's got it all, so you can ask him a question and you can see that, And many of these different subjects, some subjects you have to study for a month or a couple of months to sort of get the information in and, look at it from different angles and, get a conclusive understanding and, what have you. You can see that he's done that throughout the course of his life. And becoming so expert, then when he's come to the Western world, then he's just been, completely expert to spread Krishna consciousness, to establish deities, to establish temples, all the whatever was he was an expert in deity worship, he was an expert in cooking, You know, he was an expert in, you know, all aspects of Krishna consciousness. Madanga, music, bhajan. As one time, cooking, you know, one time he was in Sydney, and devotees, he had some hot plate or something. There was some very, you know, small kitchen with not much facility, and he was bringing chapatis to Srila Prabhupada, and they were sort of dry and a bit burnt and, you know, tough. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, was asking him, you know, what is the problem? And he kept saying, oh, it's, you know, the stove, it's the kitchen, like this. So then Srila Prabhupada himself got up and went in there, and within a very short time, he cooked this nice stack of chapatis, each one beautiful. He'd never, you know, never been in that, never cooked in that kitchen. They're just so expert. So expert. So, you know, you can see that Srila Prabhupada, like Uddhava, you know, just absorbed as much as he could. You know, it's obvious because of his expertise. But he was doing that very, very, very quietly. But Krishna becomes very, very pleased by devotees who take that trouble to become very, very expert in, you know, a particular field of devotional service, in order that they can then expand the Krishna consciousness movement somehow, helping others to become attracted and to become well situated in devotional service. And of course that's how we study here. It describes that jnana, vijnana, being fully endowed with conclusive knowledge of the Vedas and having realized the ultimate purpose of such knowledge in practice. So when we study Krishna consciousness, or different aspects of Krishna consciousness, we're certainly trying to take on a service that we can perform to Krishna very, very nicely. So when we're actually studying, it's not just for the sake of, you know, as the non-devotees, when they learn something, it means that they will get better pay, means that they will become, you know, more famous, means that they'll have a better position, you know, a higher position with so many people under them. They have so many different reasons why they actually try to develop their skills and develop their knowledge. But a devotee, when they're trying to develop their skills and understanding Krishna consciousness, it's because they want to do things very nicely so that Krishna is happy. That's really their only motivation. They just want to be very... Devotees want to understand things in such a way that they know that what they're doing is not offending Krishna or any of his devotees, that it's something that Krishna will accept. Because if things are actually not done properly, Krishna is not obligated to actually accept it. If devotees, sometimes if a devotee is just beginning and they're just in ignorance or not very expert, and they haven't had the opportunity to look into something, and they may be offering a particular service, and there may be some, you know, offences and, you know, things not quite right, Krishna will accept that. But as time goes on, Krishna expects that one will become a little more expert and reduce, you know, the faults of that service. Just like, you know, if a young child, if a 5-year-old child, if they come into the kitchen and they want to help mum and dad, So, you know, they sort of splash a bit of flour all over the floor and they get some in their hair and, you know, and they knock a few things over and you have to clean it up and so many things. But you accept that. Now, if they come into the kitchen when they were 25, right, and they're helping to cook and they're knocking flour over and getting it in their hair and, you know, spilling stuff and, you know, getting, then you think, get out of here. Huh? Don't. Go somewhere else. Right? So, the point being, of course, that certainly in the beginning, Krishna's happy to accept the service of a devotee, even though it may be full of all sorts of faults that the devotee doesn't understand because of inexperience and ignorance. But there's an expectation that the devotee will mature and learn how to do a service expertly. You know, the devotee, if a devotee doesn't have that eagerness, you know, that how can I really, you know, learn about this service so that I'm doing it in the best possible way so that Krishna is happy. If they don't have that eagerness, that's the fault. If Krishna sees that eagerness, then even though there may be some faults, Krishna will still accept the service. But if that eagerness is not there, that the devotee is, you know, quite happy to just offer any old standard of service, Krishna may not accept it. There was actually one lecture Srila Prabhupada was discussing, you know, on the principle of, you know, say even just offering flowers to the deities. You know, a devotee may get some dry flowers which are, you know, a bit old and what have you, and they think, ah, oh, well, you know, Krishna will accept them. He's not going to say anything. He's just a deity. And they may offer those. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, he makes the point that Krishna's a person. If you, you know, when you approach the deities to do some service, or you approach the holy name, you always got to keep in mind that you're actually approaching a person. So, you know, generally if you offer something second rate to a person and you look at them, you know, you can, you know, they'll generally look at you like, you know, what's this you're giving me? You know, you know, sometimes, you know, you see that in various different, you know, reciprocations, that, you know, someone doesn't really care and they're sort of making a show of, you know, doing something for someone else. It, you know, it's quite obvious. So when we're, as Prabhupada says, you know, we can give any old rubbish to Krishna, but he may not, he's not obliged to accept it, and he may not accept it. So devotees, they become very, very eager to understand how to do the particular service that they're doing very, very nicely, so that they understand, yes, this is the standard that Krishna is happy. They can understand that through Shastra. They can understand that through, you know, the sadhus and the gurus and the acharyas and this. And when devotees take that opportunity and they become very, very eager to study and to find out and to, you know, talk to devotees and to, you know, see what other devotees are doing and to see how, you know, the guru is doing things and see how Srila Prabhupada did things, and, you know, in this way just constantly investigating, always looking, always eager, you know, just to, you know, more and more and more. It's because by perfecting devotional service, then one can actually develop their love of God, and by developing that love of God and that bhava, that, you know, genuine loving sentiment, because whatever service we're doing, the real essence of it is that bhava, or that loving mood, And you know, that's what's revealed with devotees who are really eager to understand how to do their service so that Krishna is happy. That's the bhava, that's the loving sentiment, that's the loving mood. That's what Krishna likes. That's the part of the service. Without that, the service has, you know, its quality, its value is the minimum. But when that bhava is there, when that loving mood, that I want to make Krishna happy by serving him with love, then Krishna, he tastes that and he becomes very reciprocal with that devotee. And especially, so, you know, when we study the books, when we study how to do a service, we're studying it in that light, how to make Krishna happy. And when Krishna sees the devotees do like that, then, and especially when they're doing that in such a way that they can expand Krishna consciousness, attract people to Krishna consciousness through their service, then he becomes, immediately recognizes that devotee. And immediately recognizing that devotee means that that devotee becomes very, very secure. Krishna won't let them fall down. The devotees who, you know, if you get that reciprocation from Krishna, then, you know, he won't let you go. Even the devotee has some, you know, major problem, and, you know, they over, you know, millions of years of some bad habits and, you know, serious contamination in their consciousness, you know, Krishna will be so pleased by that devotee's eagerness to serve him and to preach Krishna consciousness by doing this service really nicely, that he'll just hang on to that devotee, and no matter what happens, Krishna will just make sure that devotee is staying. That devotee is one of my favorites. Nectar. There's nectar dasi and nectar das. I'm not letting him go. Whereas, you know, you see that even devotees who maybe, if they don't have that, preaching spirit, and, you know, just that eagerness to, serve Krishna, make him happy with that loving mood, they can be very, very expert in the Shastra. They can be very, very expert in so many different things. And yet, they don't have the same protection. And yet, you know, you see some devotees who are apparently not very qualified at all, but they've got that eagerness that as far as their ability is there, they'd like to make Krishna happy, they'd like to do their service with some love, and they'd like to, you know, somehow or another allow others to have that opportunity. And, you know, that's the real qualification. And then they become that somehow or another, you know, Krishna protects them, he guides them, and over many, many years they gradually become very, very, wonderful devotees by Krishna's grace. Anything that we can do somehow or another to get people to, you know, come into the temple and just smell the incense, to, you know, take a little bit of prasadam. Of all the different, I was reading the other day, interesting that, because I, you know, performed the various jagyas and samskaras, describing that someone may perform thousands and thousands of those different ceremonies. But if they do things like, you know, just take a little Krishna prasadam, they get the same results as thousands and thousands of those, you know, different jagyas. You know, if they can somehow or another just, smell the flowers, smell the incense, see the deities, They come in, maybe sing, offer a prayer to the deities. The rewards from Krishna are thousands and thousands of times more than what one gets if they, you know, practice Ashtanga yoga for hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, or, you know, on the path of jnana, studying jnana yoga for hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes. Perfect karma yogis performing pious activities, giving millions of, you know, cows and charity and what have you, just by, you know, smelling the flowers, taking a little prasadam, you know, seeing the deities, the results from that are thousands and thousands of times more, because that actually makes them eligible to begin on the path of devotional service. And beginning the path of devotional service, ultimately they'll go back to Godhead. Otherwise, there is no other path. So, you know, each and every devotee should follow here in the footsteps of Uddhava and be very, very eager to do their service nicely in such a way that they know doing this properly in such a way that Krishna is happy with it. And that sort of eagerness, even if there's still fault, but if that eagerness is there, Krishna will definitely accept it. Even though one may be immature, or there may still be many faults. But if that eagerness is not there, then, hey, Krishna, you know, here's any old rubbish, and then, you know, Krishna may not accept it. And one's, you know, situation on the path of devotional service, one can go like that for many, many years, and then one wonders, you know, whatever happened to so-and-so? It's because, you know, that eagerness to actually do things in such a way that Krishna is happy wasn't there, even though they're going through all the motions mechanically. So that's the secret of that bhava. So I'll just, if anyone has any questions, got a few minutes here. The nice point here that Krishna makes, that he says at that time you will become dear to all living beings headed by the demigods, and you will never be hampered by any disturbance in life. So one who is able to make Krishna happy, there's a slope also in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. There was actually a devotee who joined our movement back in about 1980, and he was he'd been squatting in a house for some time. A very smelly person, you know. He probably hadn't bathed very often, you know, over the course of a few years, and he used to come to the temple, and the devotees wouldn't let him inside because he was so, you know, just feral, unbelievably feral. Anyway, I used to see this person coming, and I would get him to help me to do the garbage outside. So, you know, it doesn't matter, because, you know, it didn't bother him because he lived in garbage, you know. And but he was doing a service that a lot of other people wouldn't do. So he used to help me with the garbage and what have you. Gradually, over the course of a few months, you know, I managed to get him into a shower, and, you know, we scrubbed him up and what have you, and he gradually to be able to come into the temple. But I taught him this sloka, which is in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one who controls the mind and the senses and, what's that? Works in devotion is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a person is never entangled. That's right, yeah. So I actually taught him that sloka. And, you know, because he was like someone that no one wanted to know. And, you know, It was interesting. He's still a devotee now. Still a devotee. And over the years, he actually become, you know, very, very dear to devotees, many devotees. And you could see that just by taking up devotional service, dear to the devotees, and of course dear to the non-devotees as well, because he was he became a Sankirtan devotee and still does Sankirtan. So you can see, you know, practically speaking, that when if someone somehow or another pleases Krishna and makes Krishna happy, they have the ability to make everyone happy. Because the demigods, they become completely satisfied. Even though a devotee is not worshipping the demigods, but the demigods see this devotee, they are sincerely serving the Supreme Lord and making the Lord happy, and therefore all the demigods become happy with that person. And they inspire others to, you know, become happy. And Krishna, the super soul within the heart of all living entities, he also inspires others to become happy with that person. So making Krishna happy, we become happy, and everyone else becomes happy with us as well. And you know, you see that. I know many different times where previous to being a devotee, I know you approach certain people, you know, certain people who are very rough or, you know, violent or even animals, and, you know, there was a lot of fear because, you know, they didn't like you, you know. But I know as a devotee, as a Sankirtan devotee, you lost that fear that you would just walk up to anyone. And then, you know, basically, you know, it's one of the characteristics people learn as on Sankirtan. They can literally approach anyone from any walk of life, from any race, from any nation, you know, whether they're rough or gentle, and they can actually generally, you know, strike up a, you know, a friendship with that person, you know, very, very quick. Even animals, which, you know, sometimes may be ferocious to other people, you know, and devotees approach them, and those animals, you know, they come and, you know, lick them and what have you. That's a fact. It's a fact. I know I've had experience on Sankirtan with certain dogs. I had a couple of bad experiences, but there's a couple of crazy dogs out there. But I know there are a lot of dogs, and the people were very, very surprised how I actually managed to get into the house. And they said to me, you know, I can't believe you're here at my doorstep. No one gets past that dog. You know, when you know, I sort of walked up chanting Hare Krishna, and dog just comes up wagging his tail. Anyone else comes up now. I remember also, you know, one time I was actually thrown in jail as a devotee for, you know, we were doing Sankirtan on the street, and the police didn't like Hare Krishna so much in those days as what they do now. Anyway, they charged us with obstructing pedestrians on the footpath and, you know, different things like that. Threw me and another friend in jail with all these, you know, hardened crims and what have you. I got on fine with all of them, you know, just all chatting, and it was just like there was no fear, everyone, you know, everyone, we were fine. There was no problem at all. And this is, you know, if we somehow or another, you know, learn this art of making Krishna happy, then we'll find that all the devotees will be happy with us. All living entities, even wild beasts and animals, will sometimes, you know, surprise us and show some affection. I know quite often, even working outside, that different animals who are usually completely fearful, you know, just come up and just sit next to me. I've had little mice, right? Mice will never come near you. I've been working outside, and little mouse will just come up and say, they're watching me. And I get like this, he just doesn't move. He's just happy to be there. You know, I'm chanting while I'm working. Little birds come and just sit right there. Because you can see that all living entities, they become, you know, happy with a devotee, because the demigods are happy with one, Krishna is happy with one. So this is the secret, that as we do our service, you know, try and study, not for the sake of knowledge, but for the sake of, let's understand how we can do our service really nicely in such a way that Krishna does become happy, and that we're just not offering him some, you know, something in the name of service. So I'll leave it there. So no comments or questions? Anyone happy? Yes, Prabhu.
One comment. When you're telling about the animals, I know a lady sitting here in Melbourne. Her father used to do a lot of worship on his terrace in Varanasi, in India.
Yep.
And a lot of monkeys used to come and sit.
Who did?
The gentleman.
Yeah.
The lady doctor. Her father, she did worship in Varanasi.
Yeah.
And a lot of monkeys used to
come. Oh, the monkeys would come. Yeah.
And follow her.
Yeah.
Very good example. You mean the animals?
Anyone else have some experiences like that that you want to share?
I have a question.
Yeah.
You see, you were saying how we have to be kind of fearless when we approach people, especially on the street. But sometimes when you have that, people very rude to you, how do you react to them?
Well, the first thing is, most people in the material world we see as like some sort of patients in a lunatic asylum. To be honest, you know, a lot of people are just, their activities are borderline crazy, you know. And we approach people in the same way that you would if you're in a hospital. That, you know, sometimes the patients, you know, they do things which are a little weird or antagonistic. But the doctors don't become angry at the patients. They just see them as patients like that. So in that way, you know, that's how, you know, a Sankirtan devotee sees, you know, they're seeing that the people are, you know, they're sick, the illness of materialism which makes them mad and crazy. We see them as crazy people that, you know, we don't become angry at them. We, you know, there's some pity, there's some compassion, and, you know, we're there to treat them. And you know, like a doctor, you know, well, there's a doctor just leaving now. Imagine if Mahatma got angry at all his patients, you know. But you don't get angry at them. You see them as like patients. Yeah. And you know, when that mood is really strong and you become very mature in that mood, people pick up on it. Hare Krishna. You know, even animals, you know, will sense the difference between someone who is they can't trust and someone they can. You see, in the bushfires, there was you know, the famous koala. You know about the koala? When they had the bushfires, this koala came out of the forest, and of course everything was burnt, and the koala was, you know, a little singed here and there, but the koala bear just came right up to the fireman, and the fireman, you know, fed him, gave him water out of a bottle, and the koala was just like holding his hand and just, you know, drinking from this bottle. You know, he could just sense this person has come to help me. He just walked right up to me, give me a drink. Yeah. And he just ran. But you know, for a koala bear to do that, it just never happens. But you know, he could sense here, this person is here to help. And you know, so even as a wild animal, that they can pick it up, they can sense it. And you know, when that mood is there, the Sankirtan devotee becomes very mature, more and more people will actually sense that. When you actually see, you're not there and thinking, oh, geez, you know, they got this nice house, and you know, they got this nice husband or wife, and you know, they got these nice cars, and you know, I'm a Sankirtan devotee, I've got nothing, you know. So if we have that envy and like that, then you know, they'll pick up that envy. Oh, he's my competitor. If we, you know, we see them and we think, you know, you have all this rubbish and not a speck of prema, not a speck of love, you know. You are going to be in the material world, you know, like this prison, rotting in the prison house of material existence, life after life, suffering so many unimaginable, you know, sufferings, I don't even want to think about it. You poor, misguided wretch. But when we actually see people in the material world for their actual position, and we actually, you know, you've got nothing I want, but, you know, I know how to make you happy. By, you know, you could just come to the temple and see Radha Balabha and, you know, take the flowers and take some charanamrita and have a little bit of prasadam, you'll immediately be happy like that. So devotees, if they have that understanding, people pick up on it. And when devotees are in that mood, then, you know, Krishna, as I said, as Prabhupada said, Krishna gives them all the facility, whatever they want, you know, Krishna, because it's exactly what Krishna wants. Which reminds, just one little story before I we finish up. When I was a brahmachari, we used to sleep upstairs up here. I had one dream by the grace of Srimad Radharani. So Radharani here. I had a friend who was he was my friend for about 5 years before I was a devotee. And when I joined Krishna consciousness, I always wanted him to, you know, come and enjoy Krishna consciousness. So I had this dream that I got up one day and I was going down to get him and bring him back to see Radha Balabha, because I knew if he just saw them, you know, that'd be it. I wouldn't really have to say anything else. So I caught the tram down here, and then you got out to Flinders Street Station, and then I caught the train down to Frankston, and then I caught a bus down to Mornington, and then I run, this is in my dream, run all the way up to his house, because I'm thinking I've got to get back before then, you know, before they shut the temple at night. And then, you know, I'm convincing him, come on, you've got to come, please come, please come and see Radha Balabha. So he goes, all right. So we had to run down to the bus, and we got the bus to Frankston, we caught the train, you know, up to the city, we caught the tram to him, we're running up, you know, Dane Street, and we come into the door, and just as I got in, the deity's door shut. And I was, you know, because I knew he wouldn't come back. And I thought, that's my one chance. And then all of a sudden, the door started opening, and all this incense smoke starts pillaring out of the deity room. And Radharani has got off the altar. She does a little dance in the centre here, opens up the doors herself, and then gets back on the altar. And I was thinking, you know, to facilitate a conditioned soul coming, you know, even Radharani herself, she will give you everything, all facilities. She'd get off that altar herself, you know, open them doors up, but there's no one else there. That's, they're so keen to make people Krishna conscious. So if we have that mood, you know, your success as a devotee is guaranteed. You'll be happy and you'll make everyone else happy. So I all go to the Prabhupada.